This episode is brought to you by Paycor, the HR and payroll software made for leaders. It's never been harder to recruit, hire, and engage workers. That's why HR leaders and frontline managers depend on Paycor for all things people management, from onboarding and performance reviews to compensation and benefits. Learn more at paycor.com/leaders.
Welcome to an episode of Bangarangs and Daggers. I'm your co-host, John Johnson, Corn Nation. We are going to be talking about one of the most thankless things in all of sports, and that is Nebraska basketball, men's basketball, just to be completely clear. And I'm joined by Kevin Knight, one of our writers, one of our basketball writers at Corn Nation, who is, and we actually have basketball writers. And you're watching this on YouTube. I want to point this out. I know that college football is the king, and I know a lot of you have probably subscribed to the channel because you want to see college football content. We're going to cover a lot of things. And if you just do one thing, don't eliminate your subscription. You could be looking at a whole season of content from, like, the story of the little engine that could, because that's what we're looking for from Nebraska basketball. At least I am. Kevin, where do we start with this?
I think probably a good point as any is just to highlight the fact that going into year four of the Fred Hoiberg era, just kind of look at why it hasn't gone as expected is as good a point as any. There's a lot of pessimism about Nebraska ball that I think in part with the Hoiberg hire gets lumped in with the Frost hire. And no offense, but I mean, the differences between the two is huge. Frost was an up and coming coach, and Hoiberg was somebody who had a proven track record at a Power Six program, whereas Frost was at a Group of Five football program with 2 years. He didn't really have a real program here. Hoiberg is a phenomenal recruiter. He had unique offense back in the Ohio State days. And I think you can look at the roster breakdown and just see, one, they came in and made a huge mistake in that they were like, well, you know, this is a nothing program. We need to literally build this program from scratch. And it's like, that's not really true. You know, I mean, yeah, Nebraska ball doesn't have a conference championship since the 1950s. They don't have a single NCAA tournament win in seven tries. Even Northwestern, pre his hire, made it to the NCAA tournament and won on its first try. Finally, the one at bat that Northwestern had. I don't bring that all up to rub salt on an old wound, but I mean, it's not a very successful program, but it's had some great things. At least it had an NIT title in the 90s. That's not nothing. It really isn't. And so they came in and were just like, we need to wipe the slate and start over, and we're just going to have a year zero. Like, they literally just went out and got who they could get and didn't really, frankly, need to run out the guys that they ran out because they weren't really any better or worse than the guys that they brought in. And I think the biggest problem that he's had since then is the fact that he just hasn't had a point guard to run the offense. You know, year one was basically just it's going to be what it is until we can build out a roster with recruiting and transfers that don't have to sit out a year, because that was when you still had to sit out after transferring. Wow. Really wasn't that long ago, was it? It feels like forever ago, but it really wasn't. So year one was basically just, we're going to sacrifice year one. And then year two was COVID. And it was just a complete mess. They didn't really have a lot of ability to practice. They shut down for an entire month in January. And by the time they finally get things rolling, it's March. They've already shot themselves in the foot in terms of having any success or opportunity for the postseason. And then the next season, you come in and you lose Trey McGowans, who's one of the key leaders right from the get-go. You lose a couple close games. You lose Wilhelm Breidenbach. And again, you don't have a real point guard, especially with Troy McGowans going down. And by the again, by the time the team starts building something, the season's already been shot to hell in terms of any long-term success with it. And so it just ended too early. And I don't honestly know that we can look at this season and say that they have a point guard, which is one of the biggest problems that they've had, but maybe they do. They certainly talked about it a lot at Big Ten Media Days. So I think,
okay.
Yeah.
Fred Hoiberg has, I think he's pumping this idea that this year is different. Should we start there? What do you think this year is different?
It was kind of interesting, actually, in some of his things that he chose to focus on at Media Days, that he was talking about team unity and how close they are and how focused they are and whatnot. And I think it's interesting that he chose that, given the fact that just last season, two of the guys on the team were brothers. And I forget who exactly has played with them growing up in AAU ball and high school and whatnot. So the fact that you had that family dynamic on the roster, and yet this year is the year where you focus on talking about how close-knit the team is and how focused and zeroed in they are and how much time they spend together off the court. I don't know. It's an interesting
thing. Is that marketing, though? Don't you think that's kind of a marketing thing?
Because every coach has to come up with a narrative.
His thing has been roster turnover, I guess. For me as a guy who doesn't, I don't understand basketball that well. But I want the team to be successful. I like the players, well, because they're wearing a red M. But, you know, when I look at him, I go, my God, could he turn the roster over any more than he already has? And maybe that's it this year. We actually have, you know, we have some people gone, but we do have some guys coming back.
Yeah, the roster continuity is nice for a change. As you mentioned, there are some departures, and they're not minor. Bryce McGowan's is gone, the first five-star recruit out of high school, and a first round. I forget if he slipped to the second round. I should know this off the top of my head, so I apologize for slipping on that. But NBA draft. Draftee out of his year, first one and done in program history too. And he was a leading scorer. He had 16.8 points per game and 5.2 rebounds per game. And he was the second best rebounder despite being a wing on the team. So, I mean, that's significant. And also gone is Alonzo Verge Jr., who is the second leading scorer on the team and the leading assist with 14.5 points per game and 5.5 assists, which is kind of stunning when you think about it, because he was not at all a pass first point guard, which was part of the problem, in my opinion, was he didn't run an offense. He ran a lot of our commenters like to call it hero ball. And
right.
that was his style. And without Trey McGowan's out there early on, that's what they did through a lot of games, was just have Alonzo and Bryce not really be true ball hogs, but be I'm going to try and score rather than run any type of scheme. And despite the talk about the spacing and whatnot, Hoiberg did run sets last season. He did a lot of things to try and figure out how to get the offense moving. And frankly, it might be addition by subtraction with losing these guys, but there's still a lot of production lost by them. But right. on the flip side, you've got a lot of guys coming back that are huge. You have the biggest get is the fact that Derek Walker Jr. is back.
Yeah.
And our leading rebounder with six rebounds per game. And he was the third leading scorer with 9.5 points per game. But I think you'll see the offense this year really make it an emphasis to get the ball in his hands. He's not somebody who is incapable of scoring down low, but he's also not somebody who, I always like to make Michigan State references because that's who I'm more familiar with, obviously. Yeah, he's not a Nick Ward. You pass the ball down to Nick Ward a couple years ago when he was the center for MSU, and the ball ain't coming back. He could produce, but my God, the man was just one of the most ball-centric centers in college basketball in his final seasons. And Walker's not that. He has the ability to dish it back out, which is important with the offense that Hoiberg runs and the wing sets that he has, the skill on the wing. So that one's a huge get. Also back is CJ Wilcher, who was a Xavier transfer, kind of came along last year. Has a lot of hype in terms of his recruiting out of high school, and should be able to build on that, I think, this year. He was the fourth leading scorer with 8.1 points per game. He's obviously going to have to up that. And finally, Wilhelm Breidenbach is going to be a big, big get in terms of coming back from injury last year, not just because of the sports goggles and not just because of the name. he was showing a lot of progress as a freshman early on, and unfortunately went down very early on in the season with a knee injury that took him out for the season. And Hoiberg definitely highlighted him in Big Ten media days, and I think he's going to be a huge get for a returning player as well. And we're going to see him compliment Walker down low.
But I always said he looked like a serial killer, honestly, and he still does to me. I wonder if he's changed his hairstyle, but he can play that up. You know, maybe there's nil deals in that for him. What is he? I mean, honestly, what is William Breidenbach? I don't understand. I'm the dumb guy. I kind of get the difference between a shooting guard and a point guard. You know, point guard runs the offense, assists, tries to drive, dish out, get the defense to react to him, some stuff like that. Derek Walker, big guy, go get rebounds, score underneath, cause tension for other huge big guys. I don't understand what William Breidenbach is.
Yeah, so he's power forward, which can vary a bit with Hoiberg's offense. Sort of basketball writer Nate McHugh is a lot better at explaining some of the nuances of this than I am, being he's a high school basketball coach. But basically, Hoiberg has two types of offense that he runs with the four, more or less. There's the space style, which he's more well known for, but he also has started to get a little more traditional with it. So the power forward is essentially, how do I look at it? He's kind of like a tight end compared to a fullback, I guess is how you could look at it. You know, the center is the fullback. He's the big giant guy down low. He pushes you around. He scores down under the basket and can, you know, come out and set picks and whatnot, aka block for the quarterback, that kind of thing. Tight ends, the same thing to a lesser extent. He has more versatility in his style of play because he's a smaller guy. So in that way, I think, you know, you can see him play more at the top of the key, or you can see him pushed out to the wing if they're going to try and open up the lane for the wings to drive in on that. Breidenbach is more of a traditional power forward in that way. I think he can certainly play out in space, but he's somebody who is more of a traditional Big Ten power forward, who can also, you know, the other thing is they can supplement the center if you're going to play small ball or if you have to because of foul trouble. And that's basically what Breidenbach is.
Should we go through some more of the returning guys that I have questions about, or should we just get to who's new?
Yeah. Feel free to ask on the new guys. Those are the three off the top of my head that are highlighting, but who else?
Yeah. Like Kaisei Tominaga. I mean, he's the shooter guy. He didn't really get into rhythm. I mean, yeah, people loved him because I think they saw the effort he played with, and just at times he was just tough. But he never materialized into a scoring machine that we desperately need.
Yeah. So Tominaga is a very, how do I want to phrase it? He's an excited player. He brings a lot of heart to the floor. But he also was a prolific three-point shooter in the JUCO level. And frankly, it doesn't always translate to a Power 6 level, especially a Big 10 Power 6. Granted, the Big 10's kind of dog shit this year, but it's still a tough league to play in, and it has tough venues to play in. I think maybe he might do better if they do a better job moving the ball around and he can get into rhythm as a catch and shoot guy. I'm not sure that he really ever had the opportunity on that. Also, you know, I mean, just a year in the league might help because he wasn't used to that level of competition. So hopefully we can see that. I'm not necessarily confident, but he's definitely going to be somebody coming off the bench and not a starter. That's for sure.
Corin McPherson. Is that his name? Yeah. What's the deal with him?
I'm just going to admit ignorance. I have no idea on him.
Corin McPherson, guard, yeah. Redshirt freshman. I'm looking at the roster. So he really not making much of an impact. Then we had Oleg Kojanets, the dude from Lithuania. I don't even think he barely played last year, but I mean, he's 7 foot tall. You could just put him someplace down low, right, and expect him to be a body.
Yeah, yeah, he's definitely somebody who's a body. He was supposed to be able to be a big man who can shoot, including from outside. But I think in part his size is a problem. He's a small guy. He's tall, but he's small in terms of weight and size, and that can be tough to play through in the Big Ten when you're a big man like that. Hopefully he hit the weight room and can maybe come along a bit. I mean, he needed to work on his shooting too. So hopefully he's again adjusted to the Big Ten and can bring something more, but definitely going to be again coming off the bench.
So we want to go through the new guys, starting yep. with Sam Greisel.
Yep. So Sam, sorry, go ahead.
Is that is how you pronounce his name? I got to learn this stuff from you.
Yeah, I think he got it right. So he's a hometown kid, actually, from Lincoln originally. And so he's got a lot of interest in him from a fan perspective in that sense. And he had a fun line that I don't have memorized, but roughly paraphrased. It's basically, I'm trying to make my 10-year-old self proud this season. Was his line from Media Days, which was kind of fun. You know, he's somebody who grew up watching Nebraska ball, being a Nebraska ball fan. So first off, you know, hats off to him for being one of the few out there that does that. They could use more. But I mean, it's going to be fun seeing him enjoy being able to play for Nebraska for his final season. And frankly, when he got announced as a grad transfer from one of the North Dakota schools. I'm going to get vilified for not remembering which one it was. I think it was
North Dakota State.
I mean, he's coming from North Dakota State. And so in that sense, not a bad program, but, you know, you see a lot of players come up from not Power Six programs and they struggle a bit in the Big Ten. And he's a 3-star transfer recruit. So as a transfer, he's rated as a 3-star, and that's not bad, but I mean, it's not a top shelf point guard transfer. But Hoiberg was particularly raving about his ability to bring the ball up under pressure and be the floor general that has been lacking previously, and talking about him at Media Days. And I think the level of maturity, the excitement that he brings to the program as a fan who gets to play for the team that he's rooted for all his life, combined with the fact that he apparently is somebody who can run the offense for a change, I think that's going to definitely help in that regard. So Media Days got me more excited, frankly, about him than I had previously thought. Because in part, I was a little pessimistic about the fact that they've lost Cam Mack, they've lost Delano Banton, they lost Trey McGowans. Who do they even have on the roster at this point that's a true point guard who can do this? Apparently, Sam is. So hopefully that's right.
Juwan Gary.
Yeah, so I'll ignore the first name there. Carries a little bit of a familiar aspect to somebody who has some aggressive tendencies in the league. But no, Juwan Gary is a good recruit out of Alabama. He had a lot of promise. He was a 4-star coming out of high school. He was only a 3-star as a transfer, though. But he was on a good Alabama team the past two seasons, and he played more of a role player role there than I think he expected because of the talent there. But he's played in the NCAA tournament He's had a lot of success in the SEC, or he's been on a team that's had a lot of success on an up SEC league the past two seasons. So he's a good addition and a good scorer for Nebraska to get out of the portal.
Blaze Keita, this is a lot of our hopes are riding.
Yep. So I believe it's Keita. Blaze Keita. Keita. I could be wrong. I think that's it. But yeah, so another JUCO recruit who really lit it up, helped his team win a national championship or runner up. I'm pretty sure it was a national title in the JUCO route two seasons ago. He did phenomenal there. Great big. It's also, I believe, somebody who has the ability to push out the defense by keeping him honest with an outside shot. That's not nothing, and you're going to have to defend it and help open up the lane, but also should be able to bring some size and power down low.
Emmanuel Bandemil.
Yep, another transfer. He got brought up a bit by Hoiberg at Media Days again. He was an SMU wing and brought some good scoring to the SMU offense. So another yet another wing who supposedly can score from the transfer portal. We've had a lot of those supposedly. So hopefully he lives up to that reputation.
You're not saying you're in terms of sales and marketing here, you're going a little flat on some of these names, Kevin.
Yeah. I mean, he's an SMU transfer. Juwan Gary is a great ad. Emmanuel Bandemil is more of a has promise, but let's see how he develops. When it comes to non P6 transfers, I tend to be a little more skeptical when they come up to a bigger league. They've got promise, which is why they've come up, but also it's an increased level of competition. And I mean, he did well at SMU, but let's see how he does when he gets into the grind of playing in a Big Ten arena in January and February, game in and game out. I by all means, I mean, he could be a great scorer. But Hoiberg's gotten a couple of them at Nebraska when they get the ball. Again, back to the point guard setting up the offense, right? And guys being able to produce when they do get the ball in that that format. But
so yeah. Ramel Lloyd, who is actual recruit and not a transfer.
Yep. Yeah, four-star recruit. He brings a lot of promise. I think he'll probably see some minutes this season. Maybe even later on in the season, work into a starting role. We'll see. But I mean, definitely a lot of potential here with four-star recruit. That's not anything to scoff at. And the fact that Hoiberg is still bringing in these guys that are four-star recruits or five-star recruits with Bryce McGowan's with his record, I think speaks to the fact that he is a coach who has a proven track record, and it just hasn't gone well so far at Nebraska. But, you know, he's getting guys like Lloyd.
Let's be honest. I mean, nobody has figured it out at Nebraska. You know, there's that lack of an NCAA win. It has to be the biggest monkey in sports. I mean, you know who I feel bad for? Is Kent Pavelka. You know, I've talked to that guy on and off over the years, and he even said, you know, when Tim Miles was fired about the NCAA win, he said, you know, I'm getting old. I want to see this happen before I'm gone. And, you know, I every time I think about Nebraska basketball, I think about Kent Pavelka, all these years he's dedicated to this program, what a good job he's been doing as, quite frankly, Nebraska's Mr. Rogers. You know, I hope that things can come around, which leads us to what are we facing for a schedule? I mean, we are starting Nebraska basketball season like tomorrow. Exhibitions, what, Shattern State or something? And then October 5th, I think,
yep,
is
that's right. Yep. Yeah. Tomorrow is the first exhibition game. There's one more against Colorado, which is a home and home series that started last year as a preseason great charity exhibition game. And the season starts November 7th, which is coming up very quickly. Again, I say this as somebody who's a Michigan State fan growing up. The non-conference, there's not a lot to get excited about. It's one that they should be able to work hard through, get the rotation down, figure out what works and what doesn't. And there's a couple challenges, but my primary team faces four AP top 25 teams in the first five games of the season, with up to six or seven of them potentially ranked teams in the non-conference alone. So
we got to have baby steps, man. We got to have, you know what I mean? This is like PJ Fleck, because we have to make these football references because nobody understands basketball at Nebraska. This is like PJ Fleck's non-conference.
This episode is brought to you by Paycor. Paycor empowers leaders to build winning teams. With Paycor, leaders can recruit, onboard and train employees, set goals, and drive performance. If you're a leader, everyone depends on you. Who do leaders depend on? Paycor. Learn more at paycor.com/leaders.
Between the kids being home and hosting, everything in our house gets used up in summer. With Instacart, I can save money by stocking up on all my favorite summer brands. I save time by getting everything delivered in as fast as an hour. And I save myself a sink full of dirty dishes by stocking up on paper plates for the annual summer cookout. Save more on summer essentials. Spend more time enjoying summer. Add summer to cart. Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Right. Yeah, it's Michigan's non-conference. It's Michigan football's non-conference this year. You know, Hawaii, Connecticut, ooh, and I forget who the other nobody was. You know, it's not that bad, frankly. There are some good challenging games by all means. It's not nothing. It's just there's a lot of games that offer the opportunity to figure this out and get some wins, which is what this team needs, frankly. You don't need. Michigan State doesn't need the schedule that they have this year, especially with the roster they have. It's just merely if I sound less than excited about some of the games, that's why, that's all. So, there's a early test at St. John's. That's going to be the first at bat for this team to figure things out. They're not a ranked team by any means, but they are number 37 in KenPom heading into the season. I'm a big Ken Pom guy. I think his numbers are helpful for that context. And the next up is going to be when they head to Orlando for the ESPN Events Invitational, where they open up with, unfortunately, it's not a Black Friday game against Oklahoma. You can't really guarantee that with a bracket, but they open up on Thanksgiving Day against Oklahoma, who again isn't ranked, but they're a good team in the Big 12, which is the top. Pains me to say, top basketball conference pretty much this year, and they were last year. Oklahoma's number 28 in KenPom. They're going to be a tough game. Neutral court, whereas St. John's is an away game, which makes it doubly hard against the Red Storm. And after Oklahoma, depending on how that goes, they'll play either Seton Hall, who's number 48 in KenPom, or Memphis, who's number 34. But Memphis is also receiving a vote in the AP preseason poll as well. They're not ranked, but they did get one AP vote. So again, very quality teams in those ones. Frankly, that's it for the non-conference for games that are going to be a good measuring stick of can this team compete in the Big Ten? Are they figuring things out? There's a fun matchup against, obviously, an old Big 8, 12 foe in Kansas State, but Kansas State's kind of garbage. So, I mean, they're not terrible, but they're 77 in KenPom. And, I mean, once you start getting that low, it's not – you're not a bad team.
Where are we at? Where's Nebraska? 100.
Yeah. They are – where's just, Nebraska? They're not dead last in the Big Ten. They sit one spot ahead, Minnesota. I believe Nebraska is 105, Minnesota is 106, or it's 106, 107, something like that. So they're just on the outside of that upper third, more or less. As long as you're a top 100 team, that's sort of the measuring stick on you're a team that you can't sleep on. Don't count it out. Don't think you're going to get the win. Once you start getting outside 150, it's kind of like if you lose, you better write off any hope of a NCAA tournament bid, because that's a big black mark on your resume at that point.
So Big Ten, we have tough stretches in the schedule, and you have multiple times said the Big Ten, I think you called them dog shit earlier.
Yeah.
Last year, I think the Big Ten was like all like, oh, the Big Ten, and then went to the NCAA tournament and pooped all over themselves, didn't they?
Yeah.
And we have to include this. I believe Purdue had a shot to like get to the Final Four, and they lost to some team they had no business losing to. And I like to point that out because I like to see others' pain.
Yeah. I always love making fun of Purdue basketball fans. They are so obnoxious. They have ridiculous tinfoil hats on recruiting conspiracy theories. With some MSU guys that Izzo's gotten from Indiana. So I'm always here to see pain for the Boilermakers. But no, I mean, the Big Ten has had a couple seasons of some of the toughest slates in terms of quality teams that have just been complete flops in the NCAA tournament. And at the end of the day, whether it's right or wrong, the NCAA tournament is what defines being a successful program in college basketball. If you're not winning in the NCAA tournament, even, you know, just getting a second weekend, let alone Final Four or national titles. And then NCAA or the Big Ten hasn't had a team win a national title since 2000. They've had three or four, five at-bats, and they've lost every single time, including, hilariously, the most recent national title held by a team that is now in the Big Ten is Maryland, who won their national title as an ACC team over Indiana in 2002. So, you know, you have to go all the way back to 2000 for the most recent national championship. And this year, I mean, the Big Ten's just down. Indiana is the highest ranked team heading in the AP, highest ranked team in the preseason AP, rather, heading in season number 13. And if you look at Indiana's roster, how are they number 13? They're
Indiana.
Not a bad team. Yeah, like I got criticized in my article previewing the Big Ten this week, where I was just like, you know, I mean, look at the roster, and Indiana's not that good. And this Indiana fan was like, well, you didn't write enough about Indiana, but you know, it's early in the season. It's like, you know, I'm covering seven teams here at once, and you're the only person who commented on this. So, you know, Indiana's not a bad team. They've got one of the better players in the league with Trace Jackson Davis, and they also got a nice coup with stealing Miller Kopp out of the transfer portal from Northwestern. But beyond that, it's a lot of good, not great players that don't make a great team. And I'm not saying they shouldn't be ranked. I'm just saying, why are they number 13 and why are they favorite to win the Big Ten? It's because there's a lot of mediocre in the Big Ten. You know, the traditional powers, Iowa, I mean, first off, they're not really a power until they learn how to play defense. Then they're down some of their key guys. Wisconsin's kind of meh. Thank God Brad Davidson is gone. It's about freaking time. And then Ohio State lost nine guys. They have a great recruiting class, but they lost nine guys, and they have to figure out how to piece together a team out of the transfer portal and be a freshman. Michigan lost 10 guys. The only person they have is Hunter Dickinson back, who, you know, great center, but also not that great if you figure out how to play against them. Maryland's in the first year of the Kevin Willard era and piecing things back together. Rutgers is it lost now both guys that have basically established the program as a not joke and a good competitive team, and they need to figure out how to make that work going forward. Penn State has things looking better long term, but they're not great this season. Minnesota's got some, they just picked up one of the top recruits in the country for next year's class, but that doesn't do anything for them this year, and they're trash. Illinois is going to be down a bit. You know, Purdue's definitely down a bit, but tough. I mean, there's a lot of decent to good teams, but there's a lot of reasons why none of them stand out.
This could be our year.
That's why I'm critical of Big Ten. Yeah, I mean, definitely Nebraska could, just by the simple fact of if you can figure out a point guard and make this work, you know, I mean, the Big Ten's there for the taking to finish in the upper half I'm not going to sit here and pretend like Nebraska should be a contender for the title, but by all means, right. There's no reason why they shouldn't be headed in for at least a Thursday game in the Big Ten conference tournament this year in Chicago when the time comes to it, if things mesh. And frankly, the schedule too, I'll just make this point real quick. And then the thing is there's not any huge stretch. One of the tougher things about the Big Ten is the venues are difficult to play in, and there's no stretch where you look at it where you have a road game at one of the historical most difficult places to play, and then you follow that up with continuing games against top teams, whether on the road or at home. There's only two stretches really where that stands out, and that's January 13th to the 18th with Illinois at Purdue and Ohio State. And then you have February 8th to the 14th with Michigan, Wisconsin, and at Rutgers. That's the only time where there's not a game that should be a competitive grab, whether because it's at home against a good team or a road game against a less than stellar opponent. It's a very competitive schedule in that way compared to some of the previous years, especially in COVID, where they just had to simply play where they could, to the point of playing back-to-back nights at Maryland two nights in a row just because they were trying to cram in the schedule because the Big Ten didn't give them kid gloves like they did a certain team that claims a fake title for the regular season that year.
Wow. So. There's two things. I had them in my head just a minute ago. There's two things I think most people don't understand about basketball that are Nebraska fans, and that's number one, we lost to Purdue in football, but we can get them back by beating them at basketball. And I don't think Nebraska fans have any concept of that, how much it bothers Big Ten teams across sports to lose games against, like, well, us in basketball particularly. So if you're a Nebraska fan, you got this far into this thing and you're listening to this, you can, if we beat Purdue at all, even at home, you can go out and make fun of Purdue all you want. Same goes for Iowa, any other Big Ten team, because to them it's an embarrassment to lose for us. And every once in a while, we should just be able to swagger about something. The second thing is I think people don't have any idea of the how huge the home court is an advantage. And I've done articles on this in the past, and you know, most people don't pay attention. So what I think Michigan State's home court is 86%. 86% something like that.
It might have dipped down to like 85 or something, with how bad they've been the past two seasons. Which I mean, they still I think had a winning record at home, even in conference play, but I think, don't quote me on that. But yeah, I mean the Big Ten has averaged the highest attendance in the country for over 40 seasons, not counting COVID. They have more big venues than any other league. And I mean, yeah, you know, that's not necessarily important. I mean, look at Duke. It has one of the smallest venues at the Power Six level, and obviously one of the best winning percentages at home, particularly under Coach K. But I mean, it's tough to play it in a venue of 13, 14, 15,000 fans. And I mean, some of these venues too are old, like Purdue and Indiana and whatnot. They're old. They're loud. Yeah. Even modern venues like the Breslin Center, the Kohl Center, PBA still get loud, even with modern acoustics and being built to be multi-purpose, including hosting concerts and things like that. They're loud, big venues. It's difficult to win in a strange environment like that. And I mean, Purdue and Indiana are basketball schools. They care about you beating them in basketball. And Purdue this year in particular is only a once at bat at Purdue. If Nebraska beats them, that's going to piss them off so much. You know, I mean, basketball is still number one, even in the Big Ten, but you sweep a team in basketball and you still get bragging rights. That's the thing, you know?
You play on their insecurity. That's what I like. Okay. You know, when I did that article, I mean, Northwestern had the worst home winning percentage, and they won like 56 to 60% of their games. So that's kind of evidence of how hard it is to play on the road in the Big Ten. Do we want to do predictions? Do you want to do a prediction?
I don't really know what to predict, honestly, other than if I can put like an asterisk on it, or like if Sam no, really is a point guard who can.
It's spreading sunshine. We're spreading sunshine here, even if it's a lie.
Okay. Yeah. So in that case, I'm going to predict Sam is a point guard who can run a Big Ten offense. And we can finally get things going. And you're going to see this team not finish dead last. You're going to see them finish in the upper half. They're going to get at least one bye game in the Big Ten tournament, which hasn't happened since like 2018, I think, 2017. They played on Wednesday every time since then. They're going to get at least one bye. I don't think they'll probably finish in the top four for a double bye, but and they're either going to make the NIT or they're maybe going to make the NCAA tournament even. They're going to have to win some Big Ten games, including road games, to do that, especially with the non-conference schedule. But I think finally this is the year Hoiberg does in fact turn it around and have some of the success that we expected of him.
I want him to be successful because I like Fred Hoiberg. I mean, he's a stand-up professional guy. He's not prone to all the antics that other guy that got fired was. He's a Nebraska guy. And the thing that shocked me or really upset me about last season was all these people that, oh, he should be fired. For what? Not building the worst program ever within 3 years, and you want this other bozo to have 8 years? My God, it just always shocked me to see people's response that doesn't obviously I could insult them and say they don't pay any attention, but well, that'd be honestly I'd say right for about 98%. I would like to see us, I don't know, not finish last, beat Minnesota. I mean, Penn State, Northwestern, those programs aren't typically any good. Just win some games, maybe get to the NIT. What I'd like to see is progress of figuring out this nut that needs to be cracked before Kent Pavelka is gone, and that's how are we going to win an NCAA tournament game? Because I feel like if we do that, then we're just going to be winning Final Fours year after year after year. It'd be like pent-up demand of the karma of the universe saying, hey, don't those Nebraska people deserve a break?
I mean, I take Sweet 16 or Elite Eight trip. Baby steps. That would be fun. Even making the second game. Technically it's the third round. You're not a basketball fan if you try and trash talk by not making the NCAA tournament because you played in the play-in round. It's a 68 team tournament that has play-in rounds for the field of 64. Okay. don't ever be that basketball fan who tries to trash talk and be like, well, you didn't make the tournament because you played in the play-in round. Okay, sure. And, you know, car isn't a car. Sure. Okay. You know, go sit down.
You know, my wife and I were at the Nebraska Xavier game in which Nebraska was favored. And it was so, God, it was wrenching. I mean, Nebraska just became so timid. And what I really remember about the game is two things. Number one, Shaquille O'Neal played his last game in college for LSU before that game. And that guy in person is proof that there possibly aliens walk the earth or some kind of, you know, people that find giants and archaeology digs. Or maybe they're not wrong. But seeing him in person was like, oh, my dear God, this man is a giant. And then Nebraska and Xavier came along, and we just were so – just so timid. I can remember one of our guys catching the ball, not even at the free throw line with a clear open lane, and he passed the ball off. And I thought, this is done. It was so disappointing. All right. I think that's it. Have we got anything else we need to cover?
I'll just add to my prediction. I think I think if things gel the way that they do, you're going to see Nebraska get a couple fun road wins. At Maryland would be ripe for the picking, but I think even a only one at bat against Michigan at Michigan. There's at Michigan State. I obviously don't want to see that win, no offense, but I think you're going to see wins at programs like that this year if things click the right way, because that's what this season is a Big Ten ripe for the picking of ending some losing streaks, particularly in road venues. So I think Nebraska ball fans can get optimistic about this in ways that they weren't able to with a Scott Frost-led football team. No offense intended by that. I mean, it's just, heading into this season, it's just
okay.
Sort of like,
if you wanted,
a wait and see approach of, you know, I prove it to me on the court. I think, frankly, in year four under Hoiberg, again, a guy who had a proven track record at a major program with enough seasons, and there's easy enough to understand ways of it just didn't work out in years prior in ways that make more sense, because they're fixable. They're not systemic. You know, what is this coach doing? Why are we shooting ourselves in the foot by having a rugby style punter directing him to punt to one side of the field when there's a two return formation? That, like, why didn't you call a timeout for that? I'm happy you didn't, because I was at that game rooting for the other team. But, you know, it's like you throw the punter under the bus for that, for something that you should have burned a timeout for, and been like, well, shit, maybe we shouldn't have a rugby style punter who isn't always 100% a, you know, reliable way of punting to one particular point on the field. Maybe we should use a timeout and rethink this play call formation. You don't see that with Hoiberg. It's more understandable of just trying to make the pieces work, and some of the pieces go down with injury, or they lose so much practice time and health, frankly, with a once in a generation, once in a lifetime pandemic, whatever the heck you want to call it. Yeah, I mean, it's just every single season there's something understandable for why it hasn't worked. And he's just too good of a coach for it not to at some point. And I think there should be more optimism than there is for it being an improvement, basically, is I think the takeaway. I'm not sitting here predicting a Final Four or a Big Ten title or even an NCAA tournament necessarily. But, I mean, an NIT team is still fun. I mean, you've won more games than you lost. That's an improvement.
Yeah, I think an NIT bid. An NIT bid would be, I think, amazing. Honestly, right now, I don't think anybody is. I think people are just beat up over the last year or two of the losing, and not just losing, but some really horrific losses that you describe. What the hell is even going on? From a guy that doesn't really understand basketball strategy and that kind of stuff. That's my takeaway, and I hope we turn it around and we have a decent season. And, you know, on a team that's fun to watch, and I think we'll close this with this. Derek Walker, was so key, because last year that guy played so well and so hard and kept fighting all the time through the entire season. You know, when they had that short run there, oh, my God, this thing looks like it's supposed to look. It looks like a team coming together and playing basketball together and getting some wins. But I think, you know, Derek Walker, I'm looking forward to probably more than anybody, just to see how much he can hope pull the team along with him. And maybe, or who knows?
Yeah, getting Walker back was huge. I really can't emphasize that enough. He's one of the best players that they've gotten in the Hoiberg era, frankly.
All right, this is John Johnston, Kevin Knight for Coronation and Bangarangs and Daggers podcast. And here's the thing with you guys. If you made it all the way through this, I would like to see comments on YouTube or on the Coronation site. I would like us to cover Nebraska basketball throughout this season, whether I do game reactions or we do some kind of news program where we cover all the sports. Let me know what you'd like in content. I know you want college football all the time, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, but it's not possible, for God's sakes. And we do have other teams that can be fun at times. And that's my outro. Thank you for listening. Please subscribe to the YouTube channel. Subscribe to our podcast. Follow Coronator. And on Twitter also is our basketball guys, at Bangs and Dags. And we'll put that in the show notes. And, you know, we're looking forward to maybe a successful Nebraska basketball season. There you go. Anything to add, Kevin?
No, I think you got it. It's almost basketball season. It's one of the best times of the year.
Go Big Red.